Danielle Bennett is a poet, communicator, and educator. She works as a freelance artist as well as in strategic planning for a nonprofit, Green Dot Public Schools. She's a former high school teacher and business leader. She believes in the power of poetry as a tool and means of compelling storytelling, and she shares that power of story with audiences across the country. I had the opportunity to observe Danielle present her story at the Fuel Leadership Conference at University of Northwestern. Danielle, you possess such a raw energy and passion. How did you come to discover this voice that you so willingly share with others?
You know how most people say that, like, the one of the largest fears that most Americans have is in public speaking? I've never had that issue for some reason. Like, even when I was little, growing up in middle school, I spoke in front of people. In high school, I spoke in front of people. So I've always been very comfortable in front of crowds and speaking. I wouldn't have said that I was, like, super confident in my writing in high school or maybe even in college. I thought I was a good writer, but I wasn't, like, a standout necessarily. But I remember the very first time I saw a performance poet on stage. I was 18. I just moved to L.A., and they were performing at my church. I went to a really, like, a progressive artsy church in L.A., and I saw them perform, and I knew that was me. Like, I just had this, like, resonating feeling inside of me that that is exactly what I wanted to be doing. So I kind of went crazy. Like, I watched everything I could on YouTube. I joined a writer's group. I started going to one of the largest open mics in the country, which is in L.A. It's called The Poetry Lounge. And then I started writing and getting feedback and editing and reading good writing. That's a really important thing for me about reading good writing. And I didn't mean to start doing it professionally. It just happened almost on accident a little bit, where I just was exploring the thing that I thought was fun and interesting, and I had kind of a different idea in mind for my life. And next thing you know, gig by gig, I got picked up to be performing and writing. So that's kind of how it came about.
Well, I watched your presentation, Free Write, and it seems like it's relatable to just about everyone who would be sitting in the audience. How did you manage to do that?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that I've discovered as I've been writing, when I first started writing poetry, and just writing in general, I thought the more universal I could write about, the more I said we or you or us, the more relatable it would be. And the more like broad metaphors, that would just, it just made more sense to me. Like, everyone could connect to it. And I found the opposite to be true. I was in a writing workshop, and then we were talking about details, and I had a friend who was pushing me to start being more detailed in my writing with my own life, like things I smell, things I see, things I hear, like exact phrases, times, specific people even. And so I started tailoring my writing a little bit more. And I remember the very first time I wrote a piece about my dad. And I went to the lounge, the poetry lounge that I was mentioning, and read it and was super nervous that no one would get it and then I would just be this exposed, nervous person up there. And I remember one of my friends coming up to me and saying, "That's the most connected I've ever felt to your work." And I found the more detailed, the more honest I get about what I'm actually talking about, instead of trying to hide it behind a metaphor, the more people connect, which is a strange, strange thing. Because I wrote that free write piece for me. Like, I wasn't necessarily intending on performing it. It was just a free write. And a lot of the things I'm talking about are deeply specific to conversations that I've had and to moments that I've had and exact things I was learning. Like, I talk about being 86, but that's because I was talking about my grandfather. And I call out two friends at the end, but that's because I was talking about two very specific conversations I had with friends. So it's always a gift to me when I hear that people connect to my work, because that is the product of me being specific and honest and vulnerable. And when you're doing the writing, you're not really sure whether or not other people are going to get it. You just try to be as honest and authentic as I can. So
when you're talking to, say, a group of people who are leaders or potential leaders at a conference like Fuel, what's the lesson in that for them to maybe be transparent? Because we're certainly not taught to be that way when we're going through school and or even leadership training. We're not always taught to be transparent, and yet that's such a great way to connect. How do you talk about that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's culturally really different, too. If you go to Europe and you ask someone how they are, like, you'll get a very different response than you do in America. We just tend to be a little bit more, not all countries in Europe, but in many countries in Europe, it's a little bit more socially acceptable to be very honest when someone says, "How are you?" Here, it's always, "How are you?" "I'm fine. I'm good. How are you?" So I think that the importance of pushing past that, particularly in a leadership perspective, is that one of the most important things I have learned as a leader, and I continue to learn, is that you cannot take someone where you're not willing to go. And you cannot expect something from other people that you don't do yourself. So whether that's serving or taking on a really small, menial task, you can't expect the people who follow you or work for you to do it if you're not willing to do it. And I think in the same way, there's such power in vulnerability, but if a leader is not willing to be vulnerable first, I don't know how they expect their team or the people who follow them to open up and actually tell the truth if you're not willing to tell the truth from the top. Mm. And I understand, like, as you have more and more eyes on you, it can get scarier and scarier to feel exposed or rejected or judged or misunderstood or twisted, which is all of those things have happened to me in leadership and in poetry, mm-hmm. where the things I've said and shared have been twisted or just not understood. But I've had the exact opposite happen too. And I've said things and been really honest and vulnerable about my life, and I've seen that give permission to other people to do the same. And I think for me that far outweighs the fear of rejection or judgment. Mm.
Well, it seems like something that people have to trust. They have to trust that process to actually take the leap to be vulnerable with someone. And it seems like that might be a difficult leap to take for someone who's never done it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I teach a lot of workshops. It's one of my favorite things to do with poetry. But I love poetry, and I have a lot of opinions about poetry, and I love to teach poetry. But really, the fun thing for me is giving people a space to kind of... I like to think that we all have these little stories that walk around our bodies and walk around our souls, and they can own us if we let them live there without paying rent. Hmm. And that sometimes we just need to give them another place to live besides us so they stop owning us so much. And so you give these stories a page to live on, whether it's a story of love or forgiveness or pain or whatever it is. And there's, like, such freedom that comes when you actually take the leap of... And it's far less scary. Like, I start doing it now just as a processing tool. That's how I use poetry over the past couple of years. And it's far less scary than I think when I just put it on a piece of paper. Hmm. I'm like, oh, that's not that bad. But I haven't said it for a year and a half, and I, like, totally freaked out inside about ever saying whatever X, Y, and Z story. Yeah.
Tell me about all of this led to me seeing something on your website that says you do a presentation called Tired. And I thought, now that has to be something that's very vulnerable. Am I right about that, or can you tell me a little bit about it?
I think... Me and a lot of the people that I do life with right now in my community, like, we face this similar challenge. We're just really tired. I live in LA, and it's really easy to never stop. And Sabbath is almost laughable where I live. Mm. And there's just, like, such a pressure to be and to perform. And when I say perform, I'm saying, like, the way I perform. I'm saying, like, the day-to-day just to perform. And to grind, and I'm such a fan of goal setting, and I'm a hard worker. I really believe in the nature of hard work, but I think the backlash of that is I stop valuing rest. And you'll hear this in my piece a little bit, but the body will say what the mouth doesn't sometimes. Hmm. The body will show up. Like, all things physical are rooted in things that are spiritual. And so the spirit will speak through the body. The spirit will speak through creation when we won't listen. And that's, like, why there's this nature of rest and seasons in nature, too. I mean, bears hibernate. Like, all of these things are God teaching us lessons about what it means to, like, come to him and rest and to lay in his pastures. Like, that's not just metaphorical, pretty language. That is, like, him saying, no, I've set a pattern in creation for you to rest. And it's just not, it's not easy to do where I live. And I know that's a lot because I don't make it easy to do in my life. So that's been a huge theme for me this year, which is why I wrote it in April of this year, and it is now November, and a lot of those same things can be true for me still. I'm still learning what it means to take Sabbath, particularly as someone who travels as part of my living, and that by nature I'm just a doer, and I go, 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 and I get a lot of applause for that. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of people who love and praise how hard I work and how much I go. So there's not a whole lot of incentive to say, no, I'm not going to volunteer for the extra thing at church or I'm not going to volunteer for the extra thing at work, or I'm not going to do my seventh coffee this week, or my third, or my first coffee this week with someone. Like, there's not a whole lot of grace and language for that, but I think it's because we don't stake out boundaries for that in our own life, in our own heart. But it's a battle. Tired people don't make good decisions, and we don't make space to rest. So that is what this piece is about, and I think you'll hear it come through in my performance, I think. Because that's another thing about poetry, is that people often think I'm monologuing or acting, but I'm not acting. There's a difference. It's like I'm just revisiting the feeling that I had when I wrote it. So, that's what some of the nature of the tired piece is about.
So how does your faith play or fuel you for the poetry and the pieces that you create?
I have a lot of responses to that question. I have tried to quit poetry. I asked God at one point to take it away from me because it was distracting and felt like this nagging thing that I felt like I was called to do, but I had so many other things on my plate. Like, I also work in strategy for a nonprofit. For a while, I was running my grandfather's company. And these poetry offers would come up, or these poems would come up in me, and I didn't have time. I was too tired to write them, and too, quite honestly, too scared of what it would say when I finally let them out of the little roaming halls. And so I remember praying on an airplane once on the way back from Maryland, where I was doing a business trip, and I asked God to take it away. And 2 days later, for some reason, I was at the Poetry Lounge, and I hadn't been there in a long time, and I was out helping them do something in line with people. And this girl stopped me, and I had not performed there in a while. And this girl stopped me and said, "Hey, I just need to tell you I really love your work." And I knew in that moment it was from God, because I hadn't performed there in a long time. I've been doing this for a while, but this has not been my profession, like my full-time gig for a long time. Mm-hmm. So my ego isn't bruised when I don't have name recognition by any mean. I don't mind that. And so I don't expect it anywhere that I go. But I felt like it was just God's gentle nudge on me. And I don't understand the gift. I come from a very corporate background, and I like what I'm able to do in an office, and I like the way my mind works in more of a office-y setting. I like it. It's like I don't have this job that bores me or whatever, and so I need to have my art as a separate thing. Like, I feel valued as a whole person there, but I cannot deny that some of the biggest moments I have felt in freedom for myself, aliveness for myself, and then watching freedom happen for other people is when I am performing and teaching. And I think that this whole art journey reminds me how much I don't understand God, but I trust him. I don't understand all the things he does or why he does the things he does. I don't understand the trajectory he has me on right now. I don't get it. I don't get why I have so many good options in front of me, but I do trust him. And I think the biggest thing I'm learning in this season in relation to my art in particular is that God's not going to call us to something that he doesn't enable us to do. And God's not going to put visions in my heart that he hasn't made a way for. And I think I'm trying to learn, and I don't really get this entirely yet, I'm trying to learn the art of having my hands open, where I can say, yes, I hold the vision, I hold the calling that I feel. I hold it, but I don't grip it and live by it and try to make it happen. And if it changes or morphs or is away for a season, then it's okay, because I've held it open. So there's a hard balance in that I feel like it's taken me a long time in my faith that's innate in trust. It's hard to live in the tension or the anxiety of trust, but it has been well worth the journey.